Dear ones of God and Guru, loving greetings and pranams. Please be seated. Let's begin our closing program this morning with a prayer to invoke the great blessings of our Divine Beloved and our Param Gurus and Gurudev. Take a moment to feel their surrounding presence hovering over this beautiful meditation hall, descending into the hearts and minds of their eager and beloved devotees, all of you. Please pray after me. Heavenly Father, Mother, Friend, beloved God, Bhagavan Krishna, Jesus Christ, Mahavatar Babaji, Lahiri Mahasha, Swami Sri Yukteswarji, our beloved Gurudev, Paramahansa Yoganandaji, saints of all religions, we bow to you all. O beloved God, awaken within me the realization of my true immortal nature. I am not this body. I am not this mind. I am the ever new joy of the soul. I am not this body, which changes and passes away. I am not this mind, which beholds only the changing scenes of Maya. I am the Atman. I am the soul made in thy divine image. Bless me that each day, more and more, I may live in that consciousness of my soul's oneness with thee, ultimately merging my soul in thine infinite being. Shanti, shanti, shanti. Beloved ones, I want to urge all of you to remember what a powerful aid on the spiritual path is the simple invocation, the simple fixing the mind on each of our revered gurus, that illumined line of masters that has brought this teaching of Kriya Yoga to us. Each one is a scripture unto himself. Each one is an endless fountain of divine blessings and help. Help and blessings of a specific kind, of a specific variety, which is unique to each one of them. Just visualize their forms. Bhagavan Krishna, that great joyous incarnation of divine love, who yet rose to the occasion during the battle of goodness against evil to become the general, the leader of the soul, the leader of our souls in our battle of inner battle of Kurukshetra, Bhagavan Krishna. Jesus Christ, that great avatar of divine compassion, forgiveness, wisdom, and healing. Jesus Christ, Mahavatar Babaji, transcendental beyond human conception, and yet radiating into our lives, radiating into this sadhana and sangam, this Kriya Yoga Sharanam, that pure, infinite, unconditional divine love, which, as he said to our revered Dayamataji, that love which alone can change this world, that love which alone can change each of us. Feel that when you think of him, Mahavatar Babaji. Lahiri Mahashai, that joyous incarnation of the fruit of yoga, bliss, bliss, bliss all the time, bliss in every particle of our being. Feel that flowing from him into your lives. Lahiri Mahashai. Swami Sri Yukteswarji, Gyanavatar, incarnation of divine wisdom, the one who, you might say, holds the standard very high, very lofty for each of us. Why? Because he knows that we can be perfect, we can manifest the highest heights of yoga attainment, and his clarity of vision, his great all-embracing wisdom, which was universal, which included all humanity, all countries, all religions in its embrace. Let us partake of that wisdom, that strength, that divine willpower, Swami Sri Yukteswar. And then we come to our own divine and beloved Gurudev, Sri Sri Paramahansa Yoganandaji. I won't even attempt to begin a list of the divine qualities that he, as our direct Satguru, I won't even attempt to begin to enumerate the blessings, the qualities, the all-around perfection and beauty and love and wisdom and joy that come when we attune our hearts and attune our minds with him. So as I said, this is in addition to the meditation techniques, this in itself is a powerful technique for all who follow this path, to attune, to align our consciousness, to open our hearts and minds to that living flow, moment by moment, as needed, whenever we need it, whatever variety, whatever kind of help, whatever kind of blessing or guidance. Open that door, open that heart center and that center of divine perception in the Kutasta to receive the benedictions of this greatest lineage of gurus that we could ever possibly wish for. Now, in that consciousness, I want to ask you a question. Be ready. Put your mind, feel that flow of blessings. And then answer this question for me. After these 5 days of Sangam, these 5 days of intense sadhana and meditation and classes, are you ready to face the world? Yes, that's my dear devotees and divine conquerors of all problems. You know, Gurdji said this. He gave us this prescription. He said, with faith in your power to succeed, say to the world, come along, world, I am ready for you. Now, that's the consciousness that I want each of you, and when we end this Sangam, to feel vibrating in your cells, vibrating in your thoughts, vibrating in your feelings. Gurdji went on, he said, the way to true success is to be with God all the time. To be with God all the time. And of course, that includes the manifestations of God in those divine ones whose qualities and whose infinite consciousness are always available to us. So he says, the way to true success is to be with God all the time. At night, be with him in your meditation and awaken in the morning, ready to do battle with the world. Awaken in the morning, ready to do battle with the world, with him by your side. My dear brothers and sisters, that is the consciousness. That is the spirit of victory that grows within us. The more we enter into that shelter of yoga, that sanctuary of the soul, that sanctuary of Kriya Yoga Sharanam, the shelter of the soul through Kriya Yoga meditation, and through the three boons, the three great blessings bestowed on all of you, on all of the followers of this path by our divine gurus, the sadhana that they have given, meaning the techniques, the routine of meditation, the prescriptions of how to live, the sadhana. Second, the great blessing of satsanga, the great blessing of divine fellowship, whereby each of you, each of us, reinforces our brothers and sisters, whether we have outward contact or not, even only by participating, even only by living according to that sadhana, according to that spirit, that divine spirit that Gurdji infuses in us through his teachings, even by just participating in that, our efforts feed invisibly into this worldwide, etheric, invisible network of devotee fellowship, the Sangam, the beautiful spiritual family of YSS and SRF. So the sadhana, the Sangam, what's the third boon? Darshan. That darshan, that ceaseless flow of blessings from Guru Dev and from our Param Gurus. So that's what I want you to be mindful of as we return to our responsibilities and different circumstances in the world. Awaken in the morning with the consciousness that whatever comes, Gurudev, by your grace and power, I will succeed. By your grace and power, I will succeed. You know, Gurdji said so memorably to us, he said, this world will always have turmoil and trouble. What are you worried about? What are you worried about? He said, go to that shelter of God where the masters have gone and from where they are watching and helping the world, and you shall have safety forever, not only for yourself, but for all those loved ones who are entrusted to your care by our Lord and Father. Immortal words, go to the shelter of God. That's that sanctuary of the soul that we are speaking of and exploring during this Sangam. Go to the shelter of God where the masters have gone. That means every time we access that refuge, every time we go deep in Hongsa practice or Om technique or or Kriya yoga, and then dwell in that interiorized stillness, that interiorized calmness of the mind and thoughts and emotions afterwards. Every time we enter into that refuge, into that shelter, we can know that they are there. The shelter of God, where the masters have gone, and from where they are watching and helping the world. How encouraging, how beautiful. What a sense of assurance and security, that really a great sense of relief, isn't it? When we look around at the world, when we read the headlines and see all manner of chaos and difficulties that God's children have to contend with. But to know that behind it all, there's a higher power. Behind it all, there is a divine plan, and it's directed, Guruji is saying here, by those great ones, by those masters. Go to the shelter of God where the masters have gone, from where they are watching and helping the world. They're helping individuals. Certainly, each one who forms that bond of loyalty and devotion with them, as do the dear devotees of this path. They're helping them as individuals, and they are helping the world, as Guruji has said, because they know that the world will change as individuals change. One of the things I know and I feel, and I'm sure all of you do as well, that they are watching and waiting and encouraging all of us along that way, is to bring out of ourselves more and more of those sattvic qualities. All of you here know the meaning of the three gunas, sattva, the elevating, the uplifting, refined, the goodness, the truth, quality in nature. And then on the other end of the spectrum, that quality of tamas, that tamasic quality, which is downward pulling, grossening, darkening, inertia making, holding us back, holding us earthbound, holding us tied to our lower nature. And then in the middle, that quality of rajas, the energetic, the activating quality, which can either activate us in the downward motion or it can activate us in the upward motion toward the sattvic qualities. That, in a nutshell, is the evolutionary plan, part of the evolutionary plan of our great gurus and their wish for each one of you. Bring out of ourselves those sattvic qualities. Our world greatly needs them, greatly needs them. And you know, of all the sattvic qualities, what do you think is the sweetest? What do you think is the most looked for by God and the great ones? You know, our great Mahavatar Babaji answered that question for us. You remember that story in Autobiography of a Yogi? It was shortly after Lahiri Mahashai had reunited with his guru, Babaji, and he was attending a Kumbh Mela in Allahabad and walking through the crowds of devotees and sadhus and anchorites and yogis of all types. Lo and behold, all of a sudden, there was Babaji. And what was he doing? You remember the story. He was washing the feet of one of the wandering, nameless sadhus, and then just caring for him lovingly. And Lahiri Mahashai couldn't believe his eyes, because Babaji, whose very name bestows transcendental blessings, that's his greatness, that's his magnitude, there washing the feet of this humble sadhu. And Lahiri Mahashai said, "Guruji, what are you doing here?" And Babaji so sweetly replied, and he said, By serving ignorant and wise alike, I am learning the greatest of virtues, pleasing to God above all others, humility, humility. Humility. Of course, we all know that one of the charms and the greatnesses of that autobiography of a yogi is how Guruji takes these great ones and recounts situations or incidents in their lives which they had no reason to go through. They had no need. For heaven's sakes, Babaji needing to learn anything, let alone humility, I don't think so. And yet, enacting that drama, why? So that in gatherings like this, in our individual study of the teachings, in our individual sadhana, we can have those immortal words, that immortal lesson that he imparted, the virtue that is pleasing to God above all else, humility. Our revered Sanghamata, late Sanghamata, Sri Dayamataji, she used to tell us that on her desk at the Mother Center at our international headquarters, she always kept this little card, this little placard. And she used to share it with us with great encouragement. It was a little card that had this little prescription entitled Humility. Humility. Let me read this to you, and you'll see why. It was by a Westerner, spiritual writer named Canon Carter, and he wrote, "Humility, humility is perpetual quietness of heart. It is to have no trouble. It is never to be fretted, vexed, or irritated, or sore, or disappointed. It is to expect nothing, to wonder at nothing that is done to me, to feel nothing, nothing done against me. It is to be at rest when nobody praises me and when I am blamed and despised. It is to have a blessed home in myself, where I can go in and shut the door and kneel to my Father in secret and be at peace as in a deep sea of calmness when all around and above is troubled." Isn't that a beautiful description of the sanctuary of the soul? In those words, we have a beautiful glimpse of that refuge within that we create by yoga, by meditation, that refuge of Kriya Yoga Sharanam. To have a blessed home in myself where I can go in and shut the door and kneel to my Father in secret and be at peace as if in a deep sea of calmness when all around and above is troubled. Kriya Yoga Sharanam. You know, the devotee cultivates that consciousness of that blessed home in our souls, in ourselves. The devotee chants and affirms and experiences in the temple of silence, in the temple of peace, "I will meet thee, Lord. I will touch thee. I will love thee and coax thee to my altar of peace." In the temple of silence, in the temple of peace, I will meet thee, I will touch thee, I will love thee and coax thee to my altar of peace. Make that a meditation. Make that a part of your meditation. Visualize and feel and affirm that experience Take it deeper and deeper. Go deeper and deeper in those thoughts. Make them come alive for you. Make them come alive for you. They're not just words. Never are they just words. Don't ever think that, because words have power. Words are the vehicle in this realm of duality, this realm, this material world. Words are the vehicle of that divine creative consciousness in this realm of relativity. Yeah, when we go deep in meditation, we transcend thoughts and words and so on. We touch that absolute source of being, and then there's no words, there's no vibration, there's no outer expression in that way. Nothing but that eternal stillness, which is bliss, which is the immortal consciousness of our unity with spirit. But as long as we're living in this world, words are not just words. That's why Guruji gave us so many beautiful words, so many beautiful affirmations, so many beautiful vehicles on which we can allow our consciousness to ride into that state of divine perception of truth. In the temple of silence, in the temple of peace, I will meet thee, I will touch thee, I will love thee, and coax thee to my altar of peace. When we go deep in that consciousness and feel, first of all, feel that silence, feel that calmness, feel that peace, and then feel that that vibration is drawing the divine into the range of our perception, we coax that beloved one onto the altar of that inner stillness, that inner peace. And you know what happens then? Then the devotee begins to be aware of the answering vibration, the answering call of the divine beloved, urging us, in the words of the Gita, urging us, on me fix thy mind. Be thou my devotee. In ceaseless worship, bow reverently before me. Having thus united thyself to me as thy highest goal, thou shalt be mine own. Again, not just words. This is a divinely formulated technique that we use, that we feel almost spontaneously when we enter into that temple of stillness, that temple of silence, that inner refuge of the soul, where the doors are open between our consciousness and the divine consciousness. And from that divine consciousness flows this power, flows this urging, flows this summons, on me fix thy mind. In other words, in that state of concentration, in that state of focus that we build within ourselves by practice of Hongsa, by practice of the techniques, by practice of Kriya Yoga, we fix the mind on that one to the exclusion of all else. No distractions, no other thoughts, no other desires. On me fix thy mind. Be thou my devotee. Or he could, with a different emphasis, be thou my devotee, meaning pointing at you, pointing at me, pointing at each one of us. Be thou my devotee. As Guruji told us, that quality of devotion, coupled with the techniques, coupled with the science of meditation, Kriya Yoga plus devotion, it works like mathematics. It cannot fail. With ceaseless worship, bow reverently before me. And then, having united thyself to me as thy highest goal, what do we feel? What do we know? What do we experience? we are His own. We are the beloveds of God. Each one of you is the beloved of God. Never doubt it. Never doubt it. If it becomes vague to you, if it becomes distant, you know what to do. You know what to do. Go into that inner refuge of the soul. Go into that secret, blessed home within ourselves and close the door and kneel to the divine beloved, father, mother, friend, beloved, in secret. And affirm, I will meet thee, I will touch thee, I will love thee, and coax thee to my altar of peace. And then that consciousness of having thus united thyself to me as thy highest goal, we know we are His own. And then what happens? It goes on, it goes on, it gets more and more beautiful, more and more joyous, because then we come to the next phase after that, where spontaneously the consciousness of the soul goes into the next phase of that chant that Guruji gave in the temple of samadhi, in the temple of bliss, in the temple of samadhi, in the temple of bliss. Lord, I will meet thee, I will touch thee, I will love thee, and coax thee to my altar of bliss, of bliss. There is no higher experience, because that is the meeting of soul and spirit. That is the merging of soul and spirit in what? In bliss. In bliss. Our guru wrote to his great disciple, Rajarshi Janakananda, I think all of you have been so inspired as I have by his life. You know, a Western yogi, great businessman, who ran and chaired the multifarious affairs of many different business concerns, raised himself from poverty to complete material success, but more than that, became that exalted example of the perfect devotee of Gurudev. You know, just to digress for a minute, one of the devotees who knew Rajarshi well over the years observed one time, he said, when Rajarshi first met Guruji, he was all businessman and spiritual nil. And years later, she said, he was all spiritual and businessman nil. So in one of the letters that our guru wrote to his beloved Rajarshi, remembering this, in the temple of samadhi, in the temple of bliss, I will meet thee, I will touch thee, I will love thee, and coax thee to my altar of bliss. He told Rajarshi, meditate to bring him on the altar of peace, on the altar of bliss. Guruji said, bliss. Bliss is the only altar where God comes. He does not accept any other invitation. Bliss is the altar where God comes. He does not accept any other invitation. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that we have to have that ultimate samadhi in order to have the response of God. He's talking about that ultimate state of emergence, where we create that vibration within our consciousness. We create that platform, you might say, that altar of bliss consciousness. And it is on that altar, it is from that vibration, that invitation, that spirit responds and descends into our consciousness, making us one, making us one. So that's what it means. That's what it means when we talk about to enter and dwell in this eternal shelter of yoga. the shelter that our Guru has built and constructed for us and is waiting at the door, hand outstretched, to usher us in, where we can say, Lord, I will meet thee, I will touch thee, I will love thee, and coax thee to my altar of bliss. We need to keep in mind that intellectual study, it won't get us there. The doors to that shelter don't open by the powers of logic, by the powers of reason, by reading books, even by attending classes and lectures. They're useful, no doubt, they're helpful, they're inspiring, but they alone, that power of the intellect is not enough. It's not enough to get us into that interior shelter, that interior refuge. Think of it like this. You know, here we are on this path. We're trying to free ourselves. We're trying to spiritually purify and refine ourselves so that more and more of those sattvic qualities can manifest in our lives. And what that means is gradually extricating ourselves from the tamasic clutches of maya, of delusion. One by one, we pull them out of ourselves, and as we do, little by little, we rise. Little by little, our consciousness elevates. Little by little, we become pure, we become more yogic, we become more filled with that light and joy and love of God and gurus. But in that delusion that we find ourselves, here's the point. We didn't reason ourselves into delusion, and we can't reason ourselves out of delusion either. We didn't think ourselves by the logical process whereby the conclusion was that here we are in this state of body consciousness, this state of a tamasic bondage to the materiality. We didn't think ourselves into that, and we can't reason nor think ourselves out of it. We need something higher. You know, how did we get into this delusion? Guruji explains so beautifully, so simply and scientifically, that it's that descent of consciousness on the river, on the vehicle of prana, of life energy, that enters in the newly created body with the soul, flows down the spine, out to the senses. It's that prana, it's that life energy that ties us to delusion. And we can read all the philosophical treatises in the world, and it's not going to loosen the bonds of that pranic bondage in the body. Thank goodness we have the Kriya Yoga science. Thank goodness we have this science of pranayama, whereby we can master the life energy in the body, whereby we can take the breath, the consciousness, the concentration, the willpower, and get a hold of that prana in the body and use it to gradually free ourselves from delusion. So we can't think our way out of it. We can certainly meditate our way out of it. We can certainly use that key of pranayama, the key of Kriya Yoga, to free ourselves, to purify ourselves, to enter into that divine state of freedom that we're all yearning for. Kriya Yoga, one aspect of it that I want to touch on in connection with what we've been talking about today. Kriya Yoga, spiritually speaking and psychologically speaking and even physically speaking, is one of the great purifiers known to humanity. It brings that purification. It brings that awakening of sattva. It brings that freedom from the tamasic qualities that are embedded in our material nature, our lower nature, our human nature, all these things that run counter to what we as devotees want to be able to express, that we want to be able at the end of each day to lay at the feet of our Gurudev and at the feet of the Lord. Kindness, loyalty, respect, devotion, remembrance of the Lord, remembrance of the Guru, doing what we can to help others, to love others, to serve others. And countering that are those forces of greed, of anger, of hurtfulness, of arrogance and pride. Those are those tamasic qualities. So listen to, you all know this, you who are Kriya Yogis, there are in this gathering here and also in our online Sangam out there around the world joining us by the video link, there are Kriya Yogis here who have been deeply practicing that pranayama technique for years, decades, 30, 40, 50, I don't even know what the upper limit is, but many decades. And you know what happens. You know what happens when you sit quietly and you prepare the body and you lift the consciousness to that point between the eyebrows and deeply practice the Kriya technique. Deeply practice, and as the consciousness, and more specifically, as the prana, as the life force gets interiorized, what happens? What happens? And we feel in the spine. We feel in our physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual natures. We feel the awakening of those elevating qualities. We feel the awakening of those sattvic qualities. Just in a few minutes, that can change. Why? Because we're just moving that life force, moving that divine energy, that divine prana, up and down through the chakras. Even a tiny bit of awakening of those spiritual centers bestows on us a greater sense of what we really are. Remember, Guruji said the definition of self-realization is that we have to improve our knowing. That's what Kriya does. You take that current as taught in the technique and you move it up and down the spine a few times or many times even over the course of a period of meditation. And as those chakras, as those cerebrospinal centers are just even touched a little bit by that current of divine prana and consciousness and devotion, we improve our knowing. We begin to know, I'm not this body, I'm not these emotions, I'm not these moods and desires and habits. I'm a being of freedom, I'm a being of wisdom, I'm a being of kindness. I think one of the most valuable things is I'm a being of hope, isn't it? Don't you feel that? You sit down and you may be worried or distressed by the heaviness of the world, those forces of tamas that weigh heavily on the consciousness, and you do Kriya. And what happens? You become lighter. You become freer. That the weight of the world is no longer so much there. And you feel, yes, there is hope. I feel hope. I feel optimism. I feel, as Guruji said there at the beginning of this talk, I feel ready to take on the world with that consciousness of being a divine warrior, a divine conqueror. So as that process takes place, we become more pure, we become more sattvic, and we are able then to make a real contribution, a real service, just by the way that we are in the world, the way that we are around our family members and our colleagues at work and the people that we encounter. You know, in his Gita commentary, Guruji gave a very interesting and specific definition of yoga practice. Listen to this. He said, yoga, it's the Sanskrit term abhasya, abhyasa, the continuous effort to hold the mind in its pure sattvic state. Isn't that something? That's a nice practical goal. When we sit to meditate, and the mind is wandering here or running there or weighed down by this worry or that difficulty or that imagined offense or insult or hurt that we feel somebody may have done to us. Practice yoga. Practice yoga, which means the continuous effort to hold the mind in its pure sattvic state. You know, one of his early lessons, and one of the lessons that's coming in this marvelous supplement lesson series that is being mailed out at the present time, many of you are receiving. In one of those, Guruji describes three effects of purification brought by yoga. It gives you a sattvic brain, it gives you a sattvic heart, and it gives you sattvic nerves. So I want to just share this because it's inspiring. It's very encouraging and beautiful about the results that are unfolding in us as we practice day by day this science of yoga. He says, a sattvic brain, it gives us calmness and insight into truth. And he said, even if naturally not gifted with intelligence, still, the possessor of a yoga-purified brain will have no difficulty finding his or her true path in the world and the way to be happy. Does that sound attractive? Nobody said it like Guruji. And then he went on and he said, that's the sattvic brain. Then he went on, a spiritual or sattvic heart. The sattvic heart produces universal sympathy. Sympathy that is ready to embrace all beings rather than being limited to some one thing or one individual in the world. It is a heart that with eyes of faith sees God. Free of pessimism and aflame with burning optimism, the sattvic heart. We have the sattvic brain, the sattvic heart, and then he goes on to the sattvic nerves. He said, sattvic nerves are perfectly calm and strong like adamant, like a diamond. So cool and calm are the nerve cells of a sattvic person, so cool and calm, that they do not allow the transmission of disturbing sensations from the outer world to create restless waves of excitation in the placid inner ocean of mind. That is the highest yoga. That is the yoga that you are practicing. That is the yoga of purification, of bringing out these sattvic qualities, to bring out the making yourself the sattvic brain, sattvic heart, sattvic nerves. Can you imagine a world consisting of such individuals? Can you imagine the? And this is exactly what I had in mind when a few days ago I asked each one of you to make of your lives a living link between that highest yoga of India's golden age of spirituality, from which the science of Kriya Yoga has come down through the millennia into our homes, into our lives, into our hearts and minds. A living link between that golden age of India's spirituality and the currently emerging global civilization. You know, right now our world is pretty much in a, well, we'll be kind and say rajasic tamasic, not just tamasic, but rajasic tamasic state. We need those purified qualities. We need those Kriya yogis bringing those sattvic qualities into manifestation in our world. And that's why Guruji said the successful yogi is he or she who lives in that state of sattva, the elevating quality of goodness or truth. Guruji was very clear about that yoga practice being the reason why India has survived all these millennia. That and no other reason. He said, though India possesses a civilization more ancient than that of any other country, few historians have noted that her feat of survival is by no means an accident, but a logical incident in the record of devotion to eternal verities, eternal truths that India has given through her best men and women through the generations. He said, self-realized masters in every century have hallowed India's soil. Modern Christ-like sages like Lahiri Mahashay and Sri Yukteswarji rise up to proclaim that a knowledge of yoga, the science of God realization, is vital to man's happiness and to a nation's longevity. So what a debt of gratitude and a debt of appreciation our world civilization has and will increasingly have for this great spiritual gift of yoga that India has so conscientiously, so zealously, and so carefully preserved so that you and I and the rest of the world can purify our lives, can create that haven, that refuge, that shelter of yoga, where we can go in and have access to all those divine qualities, all those divine attributes that we need in order to live a truly successful life. I want to share with you a little story that how I learned part of this from our revered Sri Sri Dayamataji. One time when I was only in the ashram for just a few months, short time, all of us monks in SRF start our spiritual training in our Encinitas ashram in Southern California. And I'd been there for, I don't remember, 3 or 4 months maybe. And one day, the house brother, the monk who was in charge of us young postulant monks, I was outside the ashram doing something and nobody else was around. I just happened to be there. And Swami Premamoy came hastening by and he said, come with me, come with me. Ma has just arrived at the hermitage and we can carry her luggage for her into the building. And so I thought, oh, how wonderful. And I had the blessing of being in Ma's presence 3 or 4 times before this. And I remember each time, I've shared these stories with you sometimes before, but each time just being in her presence, just being in the aura of her spiritual consciousness, her great love, instantly one's consciousness is lifted up. Instantly you really become a different person in her presence. That's that power of darshan, that power of transmission of divine consciousness. So we were hastening up the hill to the hermitage, and Ma had gotten out of her car with her companions and had gone inside the hermitage building there overlooking the ocean. And we took the luggage, large pieces of suitcases and so on, and carried them up into her living quarters there at one end of the hermitage. And I carried it in, put it in her room just inside the door on the rug, and turned around to leave. And then Ma herself was there. She was standing at the door. And that beautiful motherly, divine motherly face and those blazing blue eyes of, talk about sattva. Sattva radiated out of those blazing blue eyes. And she took my hands and just looked into my face and she said, how are you, my boy? And of course, what do you say? I'm fine, Ma, thank you. But here's the point. The truth is, I was feeling miserable. I had been in a depressed and sort of irritated mood all day long. And so what a contrast from what I had experienced in the earlier times when I had the blessing of being around her. This time that mood was just like a thick black curtain So I could hear her words and I could see her face, but I felt nothing. I felt nothing. But then a very interesting thing happened. A day or two went by and I was successful in conquering that mood, lifting myself out of that mood back to a more balanced and normal mental state. And a day or two later, I was doing something completely unrelated to what had happened. And all of a sudden, I just felt, just out of nowhere, this tremendous force in my heart, this tremendous love and joy and upliftment. And I came to understand that was the blessing that 48 hours earlier she had transmitted to me. Delayed reaction. Now, I tell you this story for a couple of reasons. One is, first of all, to make the point that nobody goes through the spiritual, goes along the spiritual path without ups and downs, without moods and unpleasant states that we have to confront and conquer, and maybe for a long time. You know, sometimes people write to me and or ask me and they say, Swamiji, I've read Guruji's teachings about living in the consciousness of God, practicing the presence of God, but I can't do it. I do it a little bit, but then, you know, my mind goes somewhere else. Well, that's what yoga is all about. Abhyasa. Repeated efforts to bring the mind back to that sattvic state. Repeated efforts to bring the mind back again and again. It doesn't come instantly. It doesn't come instantaneously. It comes through effort, sometimes over a period of many years. But as Guruji said, just making that effort is spiritual progress. Effort is progress. You know, we should remember, we study, we read the lessons, we learn from these stories. We should remember, though, our intellectual understanding of a truth or of a principle, that may precede our ability to practice it by years. By years. You know, we can read it and we think, oh, that is so clear. I got it. You know, A, B, and C. I got that one. Yeah, you understand it intellectually, but it may be months or even years before you are successful at actually practicing it fully. So don't be discouraged. Don't be hard on yourself. Just like with this beautiful transmission that I was describing from our beloved Dayamataji, the results eventually come. The results eventually come. And it was just like it was so vivid and so immediate, it was just as if I had been there right in front of her. It was a couple of days later after I had got my mind right again. So there's another point about this, is that blessings that we receive from meditation, from sadhana, from satsanga, from even from darshan, as I just explained, as I just illustrated, those blessings, they may not manifest in our consciousness right away, but they're real. They're real and they're permanent and they live within us just waiting for the right time to emerge when we most need it. It's there for us when we most need it. Weeks or months later even, you know, you'll see. And I'm saying this now that here we are at the end of this Sangam. And so I'm making a prediction for each one of you. I predict that weeks or months from now, you may be going through some difficulty, some confusion, some upsetting experience, some difficulty or challenge. And then all of a sudden, as if out of nowhere, some inspiration, some truth, some principle that you absorbed with your concentration during these 5 days of Sangam, it'll come back, and that will be your savior in that circumstances. I predict this for you. And I don't often make such, I don't make predictions in vain. I leave that to those whose profession it is, but this one I feel very safe in making. You'll see. It'll give you that what you need to conquer. So, my dear ones, you know, here we are at the end, but we're not leaving you. We're not leaving you. Because in that Kriya Yoga shelter, that shelter of Kriya Yoga, that Guruji has created for his vast spiritual family worldwide, we are all linked. We're always linked. We're always together. We're always there, part of this group effort to know God, to love God, to purify our lives, to serve those around us, and to serve the world through those qualities of the soul, the qualities of sattva that emanate through our meditation-purified consciousness. So when you return to your homes, remember to enter into that shelter. Remember to take advantage of the power of Sangham, the power of Satsanga, if you live near a Kendra, a center, a meditation group. If not, come into our online center, our online meditation center. Come together online for classes, for meditations, for satsangas that are offered week by week by week to feed Guruji's hungry and thirsty devotee souls around the world. And most of all, maintain that connection with Gurudev. That's the highest form of satsanga. It's where satsanga merges into darshan. Keeping company with the Guru, keeping him in our thoughts, keeping him in our aspirations, keeping our ear open to his whispers of guidance, which, as I said, will come back to you as some of the things that you heard and felt and experienced during gatherings like this. So I want to just close with these beautiful words of Guruji. Again, from the new edition of the lessons, the supplement lesson 76. He says, in India, they say that no amount of water will wash away the blackness of a piece of charcoal, but you place it in the fire and it glows red with light, with light. Likewise, your doubts cannot be cleansed away by bathing in the waters of your ignorant mind, your own ignorant mind. But when the fiery knowledge of a real teacher or teaching enters into your consciousness, you are charged with light. All your questions will be answered. Your darkness will disappear. Your tamas will disappear. Your sattva, sattvic qualities will be transparent to the divine qualities of the soul. Then Guruji goes on, then these experiences that I'm telling you about won't be imagination. It's not a matter only of intellectual study of sacred teachings, but of reverent contact and attunement with the vibration of the God-knowing master, which spiritually baptizes the disciple. These lessons, these YSS lessons, SRF lessons, Guruji says, these lessons are imbued with the spirit of the great masters of Yogoda Satsanga Society Self-Realization Fellowship. If you study these teachings, you will know that they are not the result of imagination. They are the direct perception of truth, which has come through me and my great gurus. And remember to spread this message wherever you go. The greatest way that you can spread it is by your example. Help others with good thoughts of truth. And remember, those who will persevere to the end will find freedom in God. Those who persevere to the end will find freedom in God. So, my beloved friends and brothers and sisters and devotees of God and Guru, just remember, take refuge in yoga, take shelter in yoga, take refuge in your Kriya Yoga Guru, the Kriya Yoga lineage of gurus who are there waiting to help and bless. Always dwell in that protective fortress, that protective refuge, that sanctuary of Kriya Yoga meditation. The blessings of Kriya Yoga Sadhana, of Kriya Yoga Sharanam, of the divine path to the liberation of the soul in eternal bliss. Jai Guru.
Pooja Swamiji, we can't thank you enough. Pooja Swamiji, we can't thank you enough for the blessings we received from you during the Sangam. Keeping aside numerous responsibilities connected with a worldwide organization and the onerous editorial duties, you have spared your valuable time for us. Blessed are we indeed. Your illuminating discourses will have a long-lasting effect on our sadhana. The long meditation you led on the other evening remains the highlight of the Sangha and a permanent blessing for us. You also took time to participate in the Kriya Yoga Diksha ceremonies and showered rose petals on the devotees. We are grateful to you. Now, Swamiji, however, we have a complaint on you. See, we came here to participate in the Sangam with the hope that we would get rid of our desires. But you created a new desire in us. We would like to have another Sangam soon with you, preferably. Sangam with you soon, preferably next year. Since you have created this desire, you are responsible and also capable to fulfill the same. Please mark it in your diary and I will be in touch with your office. Swamiji, it's not only me and the monastics, but all devotees who are participating in the Sangam in person, as well as thousands of devotees participating online, are so grateful to you. As a mark of our love, respect and gratitude, 4 devotees would come onto the stage and offer you flowers. Please accept them. And these 4 devotees represent the globe. Among them, we have a teenager from South India. The second one is a medical doctor from North. Third one is a young aspirant from Far East Japan. Fourth one is a senior citizen from the West America. So they represent different parts of the country.
Dearest Brotherji, on behalf of all of Guruji's devotees, we offer you, leader of his blessed society, our deepest gratitude, loyalty, and
love. Swamiji, behen aur bhaiyon ki taraf se, aapke charanon mein sadar pranam aur koti 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 dhanyavaad.
Swamiji, on behalf of all the devotees around the world, especially Japanese devotees, I thank you from the depth of my heart for showering Guruji's blessing to this wonderful sangam. Arigatou gozaimasu.
భక్తులందరి నుంచి మీకు ఒక పెద్ద ధన్యవాదాలు. థ్యాంక్ యూ.
You have reduced me to speechlessness. God and Gurus bless not only the four of you beautiful devotees, but all the thousands and thousands you represent. I'm deeply touched. Thank you to you all have thanked me, but it's really in my consciousness the reverse, because to have the opportunity to spend these days in the company of such beautiful and harmonious and God-seeking, God-striving souls, what more could any monk or nun or devotee want than to see the light of God and Guru shining from so many faces? So for that, I thank each one of you. I pray that Gurudev's blessings may shower you and accompany you and strengthen you and guide you wherever your footsteps, wherever your path may lead, as we close this Sangam in the consciousness of gratitude and devotion and complete fullness of heart, mind, and soul. Jai Guru, Jai Guru, Jai Guru.